You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, we're still in California and at our favorite RV park, and I know you've been working all day and doing your thing, and I was out and about in the field doing an assessment for a law enforcement agency, and we're back together, and I know you want to have a conversation this evening.
Well, I do want to kind of, you know, continue the conversation that we had last night, which was about kind of consequences and to what end, but I'm going to take it a little bit different. I'm going to say, where are we going with this? And that's my question tonight. So I have a question for you.
Okay, go ahead. I'm ready to answer.
Okay. When you were a kid, a little kid, what was it that prevented you from turning into a hoodlum, a criminal, a street thug? I mean, what was it that happened in your life that prevented you from doing things that we see other people doing, ending up in jail, ending up going the wrong way? What do you think was the impetus there for you?
Well, first of all, just like every kid, you know, I got in trouble. And, you know, most of the things that I got in trouble for basically was my brother was younger than me, and he'd get picked on by kids, and then I would go find those kids and beat them up and get in trouble for doing that. But, you know, I can remember pretty much the only time I ever stole anything, and that was I was about 7 years old, and I, for some reason, I decided to go down to the local grocery store, which was about 3 blocks away, and I grew up in San Francisco. And as you know, Italian family and a strict upbringing. And so for some stupid reason, I decided to steal 3 pieces of Bazooka bubble gum. All right. And I don't even know if that bubble gum still exists anymore.
I think it does.
Okay. But anyway, so I steal 3 pieces. I stick it in my pocket and I leave the store and I pretty much run home and I walk into the house and I'm totally paranoid because I know for sure I've done something wrong, right?
You know, you're still that way.
I know. But anyway, so I get freaked out and I run up into my bedroom. I had an upstairs bedroom. I ran up into my bedroom and I was so freaked out. I didn't know what to do. I looked for a place to hide the booty, and being a stupid kid, I got really paranoid, and I stripped open all the chewing gum, and I stuck it all in my mouth. And, you know, 7-year-old kid with 3 big pieces of Bazooka gum in their mouth, I'm trying to chew these things, and I hear my mom yelling for me, "What are you doing up there?" And so I went, "Oh, my God." And I took the gum, and I climbed up to the top of the closet door, and I put it on the door frame.
Okay.
My dad comes upstairs to find out what's going on with me because I was clearly acting weird.
Yeah.
Okay. And he goes, he sees me in the closet, which is, there's wrong. There's something wrong there. And he goes, "What are you doing in there?" And I'm deer in the headlights, and I look at him and I'm going, "Not much." And just at that moment, a drip of chewing gum fell from the top of the closet and hit me square in the forehead. And the jig was up. And he goes, "What did you do?" And he goes inside the closet and he looks up and there's that chewing gum. "Where did you get chewing gum? You don't have money for chewing gum." And I got the spanking of my life. Then what he did, being an Italian father, is you got to make things right. So he grabbed me and drug me all the way to the store and make me apologize to the manager. And I'm just in tears. I'm in bad shape. And my dad paid the manager $5 for 3 pieces, 3 cents worth of chewing gum. And I'm going to tell you, back in those days, which was the 50s, we didn't have a lot of money. So that made a severe impression on me about stealing and doing wrong things.
Well, I had my own adventure similar to that, but not quite the same. But I did get in an awful lot of trouble. And you know, never did it again. Why? Because when I did something wrong, there was consequences in my household, and they were immediate and they were swift and they took place and they were harsh, and I knew that I would get in trouble. So I didn't do them anymore.
Was this the auto theft thing?
Hardly. But, you know, the thing is that it's about consequences. So where are we in the world, at least in the United States, with parents setting consequences for kids so that they do not become what they are becoming? It is a lot of little hoodlums and criminals. And no, not all kids, of course not. There are wonderful parents out there that are teaching their kids consequences and are teaching them to do the right thing. But when we have our courts letting people out of jail, letting people off of crimes that are, you know, really crimes that hurt people. Okay, you took some bubble gum. Did that hurt somebody? Yes, it hurt the guy who owned the store. But it didn't hurt somebody's life like some of the crimes do. And we are letting people off for everything. Where are we going with this as a society in not holding people accountable for what they do?
Well, you brought up a really interesting topic. And let me speak personally again. My parents were absolute excellent role models. They were the most honest people I've ever known. And even with that good role modeling and that good parenting and strict parenting, I still screwed up. And the reason I screwed up is that I was immature. I was a 7-year-old kid. I knew the difference between right and wrong, but I was just stupid. And I made a stupid mistake. But that was immediately corrected. And I did learn that there were consequences for anything that I would do. There were consequences for doing a bad thing, and there were good consequences for doing good things.
So had your parents not had that consequence for you, Ron, had they just said, oh, well, that's okay, don't do it again, would it have had the same effect on you?
Oh, it would have had a totally different effect on me, because I wouldn't have understood or really appreciated the difference between making good and bad decisions and, you know, doing something right as opposed to doing something wrong. And that's really what's missing in parenting. When parents are disengaged and they don't spend time with their kids and they don't role model for their kids, or you have single parent households, and especially for a guy, when the father is absent, you know, guys really need guys.
Yes.
Okay, they really do. And that's why I'm very much against, you know, these other type of surrogate parents where you have same-sex parents and things like that, because every kid needs a male figure and a female figure.
Well, and you know what? I totally agree with you, and that's honestly how God made the world. And it's a matter of a lot of women want to think that they don't need men and that the kids don't need men, and they're just fine bringing up their kids. But you know what? The kids are not fine. And listen, I understand that lots of women need to bring up kids on their own, and so do dads. But there is a difference that is just there between men and women.
Well, there's something missing, okay? Now, here's what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that same-sex surrogate parents can't raise a kid and can't do a pretty good job raising a kid, because they absolutely can. It's about spending time with the kid. It's about teaching the difference between right and wrong and ethics, morality, all of these things. But there is something missing in that relationship that stays with that kid. And the vast majority of kids do experience difficulties, and they do have a yearning for parents of both sexes. Now, what some kids do, if they're mature enough, if they find a surrogate father or a surrogate mother,
like an uncle,
yeah, exactly,
or a teacher, or exactly, somebody that can, sure. But I'm more concerned about, because there's many more single parent homes, and that child, regardless of what people think or say, is still missing a half of what they really need in life, because men and women are different. And that will always be the case. Even as much as society tries to make them be the same, we're not the same. And we're not built to be the same. We don't have the same types of mentalities exactly. And we each bring something very valuable to the table for a child. But my subject still is consequences. Even if you're a single parent, your child can have consequences for doing the wrong thing.
Oh, exactly.
And if a child does not learn consequences and does not learn a healthy respect for doing the right thing. And, you know, here's my example. When I was a kid, my mom stayed at home. My dad worked. And, you know, I had the kind of mom that would say, wait till your dad gets home, you know, and then I'd be putting a book in my behind because I knew I was going to get a paddling. I thank God for those paddlings because they taught me right from wrong. They taught me what was acceptable and what was not acceptable. And when I was in school and I went to Catholic school, the nuns would do the same thing. I mean, you could be called to the office and get a paddling from the principal.
From the nun.
You know,
yeah, sure.
And
yeah.
You could get your hand smacked with a ruler or whatever. Now they don't want to do that because they don't want to offend anybody.
Well, the other thing now, they've made it a crime. Okay, so they virtually made it a crime of corporal punishment and child abuse. And you know, we don't have to get into that.
But that's not child abuse.
No, and you and I were both working child abuse and neglect, so we know the difference. But and things are being done differently now. However, that's not to say that they can't teach the kids the difference between right and wrong. But going back full circle with regards to consequences, because I know you're using that analogy of the kids and, you know, what happened when you did something wrong to prove your point. But on a greater end, look at the end result of years and years and years of a person growing up and having no modeling, no role modeling, no education and reinforcement of right and wrong and morality and ethics, being honest, not stealing things, doing good things in your life, not doing bad things in your life. And, you know, year upon year upon year, you're reinforcing bad behavior or you're enabling bad behavior. Now, we can model bad behavior or we can enable bad behavior in our criminal justice system when there are no consequences for people that do wrong things.
Which is what they're doing now, right?
Right.
Which is
exactly
when they are decriminalizing things that are absolutely crimes against other people, and saying that there's no consequences to those things, all they do is encourage them to get worse. My original point really is that when you're a child, you learn right from wrong. And that carries you through your whole life. It's carried me through my whole life. I know it's carried you through your whole life. I have a very good sense of what's right and what's wrong. And I don't want to do the wrong thing. Why don't I want to do the wrong thing? I was brought up to understand and be afraid of the consequences of doing the wrong thing. So guess what? I pay my taxes on time. I, you know, don't do unethical things. I don't hurt people. One of the big things that we taught the kids was lies are unacceptable. Lying is wrong. Those types of things. And it was because I was afraid of the consequences. And who is afraid of consequences today? And where do we expect that to take us as a society?
Well, that's the problem that we have. And that's why we have so much recidivism right now, repeat offenses, and offenses that get worse and worse and worse. And, I mean, we can look at this in so many levels. You know, you take a look at the gun violence level that we have in our different cities across the United States. And when you take a look at these people that commit these crimes, and, you know, the other night we were talking about the rat-packing robberies, the violent crimes in Minneapolis.
Yep.
And they arrested 20 people. And it's turning out right now, a number of these kids, you know, aged 15 to 27, where we're getting well into adulthood, these are people that had even been recently released from incarceration. So what are they learning? Okay. And then we get these people that are arrested for heinous crimes and they're released on low bail or no bail. Or they slip through the cracks and then they injure or kill somebody, you know, in the immediate future. And that needs to stop.
And that is the entire point, that if there are not immediate consequences to bad behavior, then the behavior gets even worse.
Correct.
And it escalates. And this is what we're seeing in our society. So my question really to, you know, everybody in America would be, where are we going with this? I mean, why are we accepting this kind of no consequences for things that should have consequences? If somebody comes to your home and they burglarize it, if somebody comes to your car and they take things out of your car, if somebody takes your wallet, if whatever the crime is that they have now decriminalized or said that they're not going to prosecute, if you are the victim, that's terrifying and horrendous, and somebody needs to have a consequence for that.
Well, sure. And then you get, you know, the thing that really bothers me, because I deal with the criminal justice system almost every single day in one level or another, you get these fake criminal justice reformers. And I'll give you a great example, and I'll call them out, the district attorney of Dallas County in Texas. And just a few months ago, he decided, because he's a reformer, he decided that he wasn't going to prosecute crimes of petty theft. He wasn't going to penalize people for trespassing. He wasn't going to penalize people for low drug offenses. So literally, you know, you could go into a Walmart and you could walk out of there with a $500 flat screen TV and nobody, I mean, you could get arrested, but he wasn't going to prosecute it. And so, you know, the study that I'd like to see, you know, once he's decided on this policy, and he already has, is let's take a look at Dallas a year from now and let's find out, you know, did your property crimes go up? Did your trespassing crimes go up? What exactly happened? And I absolutely agree with you. So where are we going with that? Who does that serve? By telling everybody in the public that you're not going to prosecute for part two crimes, in other words, misdemeanors, thefts, low-grade grand thefts, drug possession, drug use, you're not going to prosecute for any of those things. Is that going to make society better? Is it going to make society safer? And who are you helping and to what end, like you say?
And who are you hurting?
Exactly.
And another one that really, really rubs me the wrong way is that they're not prosecuting child prostitution because they don't want to give them a record. Okay, but unless you prosecute that, you have no way to help them.
Right, because they, even if you call them a victim, and you know, I wrote a book many years ago about called The Stroll, The Mystiques of the World's Oldest Profession, and I had an entire chapter in there on teenage prostitution and people looking at prostitution as a victimless crime. And after 3 years of doctoral research, it was my doctoral dissertation, after 3 years of research, talking with hundreds and hundreds of prostitutes, both adults and juveniles, there was no way I was going to call that a victimless crime. Those people were all had tragic lives, and they were being victimized. They were either self-victimizing, they were being victimized by other prostitutes that convinced them to enter the world of prostitution, or they were being severely exploited by pimps. So, you know what? Let's continue this conversation.
I have lots more examples that I want to talk about with you.
Okay. Well, let's have a cup of coffee. I think you're having wine tonight. And let's come back and talk about this.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Spread
spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, well, I mixed my wine with 7-Up this time so that...
Is that a spritzer when you do that?
A wine spritzer, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yep. So, back to consequences here. Let's talk about the homeless for a moment, because this obviously is a problem that is getting worse and worse, and there's honestly no reason in the world for it to get worse and worse other than the lack of leadership of our politicians. And when you let people live on the streets and they have no consequences, and you have to give them notice before you clear them out, and you have to worry about where they're going to live if you move them out, per the judge in, I think, San Francisco. You know, there's no consequences for people, so they absolutely take advantage. What are the consequences, however, for society there, Ron?
Well, you know, and we've talked about this many times, and I have to deal with it professionally. And homelessness...
Well, you were just dealing with it today,
as a matter of fact. Oh, yeah, all darn day I was, yep. All right? And, you know, so I'll go into that a little bit. But as you know, there are many components of homelessness, right? There's what I refer to as the valid homeless. These are the people that have severe mental health difficulties. They could be senior citizens that have been economically disadvantaged to no fault of their own, by the way, and they find themselves out on the street. We have a tremendous problem. One of the things that's really driving homelessness besides mental health is our horrible drug addiction problem, especially with opiates and things. So a lot of the people that are out on the street are addicted to drugs. They can't work because they're incapable of working unless they dry out. And the drugs obviously lead to mental health issues. But regardless of that, even people that have severe mental health disorders, they do know the difference between right and wrong, and they do know what they're doing is wrong, but they continue to do it. And they continue to do it for a variety of reasons, but one of the big reasons, I have to agree with you, Linda, and that is there's no consequences.
Well, and there's even less consequences now, Ron, than ever before, because in the past, they would be arrested for doing drugs. In the past, they would be forced to attend some sort of meetings or some sort of detox program. But now that our politicians have decriminalized a lot of the drug use and a lot of the small drug sales and a lot of, you know, things that have to do with drugs, and, you know, in my mind, the marijuana is a gateway drug, so they've decriminalized that as well. And so what is the incentive for them to stop doing drugs? There is none.
Well, yeah, and let's just stay with this issue of what I refer to as judicial activism, and that is judges reading things into the law that clearly don't exist, or starting to establish some laws that I personally don't believe they have any right to try to establish, or to make up guidelines that, you know, infringe on the rights of the many, instead of holding the very, very few accountable. And so, you know, here's a couple of things that came up today. First of all, I read an article about the Portland police. And of course, just like San Francisco, Los Angeles, all these other cities, they have a tremendous problem with urine and feces, human urine and feces in the street. Okay. And of course, we all know that it rains a lot in Portland.
Yes.
And all that urine and feces gets washed down into the drains,
yes,
does not go through the sewage treatment plant,
correct,
goes right out into, like, the Columbia River.
Yes.
Okay, and affects I mean, everybody. Just like when you have a significant rain in Los Angeles, it goes into the Los Angeles River. It doesn't go to the sewage treatment plant. It goes right out into the Pacific Ocean. And people that are trying to enjoy the beach are going surfing. Oh, my God, it's horrible.
And by the way...
And fishing, because those fish eat that feces.
Yes. And by the way, we have had a number of fish dying from... the pollution in the water because of the homeless problem.
Right. And so the point that I want to keep raising is they protect the very, very few, but they completely abandon the many. And so let me tell you about what happened to me today.
Okay.
I'm not going to mention the agency that I was at, but I was in a fairly decent-sized agency with a very diverse environmentally, a very diverse jurisdiction. So they had, you know, urban and rural areas. And I was talking to these officers at all these different areas where I did a site inspection. And I said, what's your biggest problem? And they said, homelessness is our biggest problem. And I said, well, tell me about that. And they were telling me, like in one case, the officers were saying, we have about 6 to 8 homeless people that we are constantly trying to move from encampments, and they produce so much trash that it's about 3 to 4 truckloads of trash a week.
Wow.
And so every week they are cleaning out this encampment, and the manpower, the resources that they have to budget for is incredible. What do you think it costs every single week just in this one area for 6 to 8 people to clean up this area? What do you think it costs?
I have no idea.
It cost $8,000 to $10,000. So you've got 6 to 8 people every single week that this jurisdiction, out of their budget, is spending. So that it works out to somewhere between $100,000 and $120,000 a year. Can you imagine what you could do in a law enforcement agency with $120,000.
Well, I can think of so many things that would help so many more people. And
yeah, what do you think you could do with your community with $120,000?
I mean, you could work on some after-school programs.
Absolutely.
And you could work on, you know, I mean, just all different sports things. You could work on all kinds of things.
With drug and alcohol rehab, with mental health. I mean, you could fund part of a clinic. There are so many different things, and...
But we're picking up trash
from recidivists, from repeat offender people. And the reason is because of the recent court decision in the Ninth Circuit, the officers cannot evict somebody who is clearly trespassing on both private and or public property unless there is a bed available to them in a shelter. So all of a sudden, a judge has made the decision that we are the parents of homeless people, and it is our responsibility and obligation to provide housing for them. Well, there's no constitutional right or mandate to provide housing for people. Can you imagine carrying that out to the nth degree? We would have to literally provide housing for every single man, woman, and child in the United States.
Well, yeah, because if you take that out to the nth degree, which people will do, you know, and you live in a high rent district, and so let's just take San Francisco because that's a high rent district, and you want to live on the street, and or even if you don't want to live on the street, but you can live up there, and they have to give you a bed. You know, I mean, this is just ridiculous. And the thing is, these people who are living this way are people that have had no consequences for some time, and now a judge again is giving them no consequences. In fact, he's giving them rewards.
Well, and here's what the people don't understand, because in California, and of course this is a national problem because I'm all over the country, but especially in California, the mental health system is in total shambles. It really doesn't even exist.
No.
And that's why all these homeless people are out on the street. And these judges listen to, you know, they rule in favor of lawsuits by the American Civil Liberties Union, who are speaking on behalf of certain homeless groups, and they're leaving these people out on the street. They're preventing law enforcement from using the 5150 statute, right? Gravely disabled,
right?
Danger to self, danger to other people, to institutionalize, first of all, to get them psychiatrically evaluated, and if they need to be institutionalized where we can get them medication or even mandate medication so that they will be, you know, be normal. They won't be cured from many of these, you know, mental health problems, these psychoses, but at least they'd have a stable mental health environment.
They can manage it.
So they could live. They could work. They could have a place to sleep. They could get food for themselves. And when they don't do that, you literally are killing these people, and you think you're helping them.
Right, and you think you're being the kinder, gentler judge. And the thing is, Ron, that this has existed around the country since the 70s and 80s when they started closing all the mental institutions.
Yeah. And you did, by the way, you know, a few weeks ago, we were doing this program, and you did a wonderful job of articulating what has happened to our abysmal mental health system in the state of California.
Well, and across the country, because California, as usual, started it, and there it went across the country. But, you know, nothing has changed other than the politicians and the judicial activism that has come into play. So, in other words, from when the people stopped being able to get mental health care, which was quite some time ago,
right?
They still were able to at least get some sorts of help. But now what's happened is because our kinder and gentler judges and politicians are saying, no, you have to let them live on the street, that is where they remain, where before they didn't remain there. So our kinder and gentler is no such thing.
No, I totally agree. You know, so that's homelessness. I mean, the nuts and bolts of homelessness. But I really like, you know, your refrain, and that is, where are we going with this? So now you let them pee and poop all over the place. So now we have literally tons of feces. Downtowns in all these cities smell like urine. There are infectious diseases that result from that. And we have an infestation problem with rodents. It's medieval. You know, you take a look at Los Angeles, it's medieval. And people are walking to work every single day. They're stepping in this stuff. They're getting it on their clothes, which transfers to their hands, which transfers to their mouth when they eat. I mean, and we're getting typhus. For God's sakes, when was the last time we had typhus?
Well, and they've got leprosy.
And I'm telling you what, we're going to get the plague, just like in the Middle East. I mean, the Middle East, the Middle Ages. So, I mean, you know, that's my thing on homelessness. You know, here's another thing that gets me, and that's bathrooms. And, you know, and what I mean, you know, what do I mean by bathrooms? I mean that now they're doing, because of the lobbying and the influence, and quite frankly, people are intimidated and scared by the LGBT, you know, community. We have people that allege to feel like a woman, but they're males.
Right.
Being allowed to go into female bathrooms.
Well, this is another where
children are.
Right.
So what is the purpose of that, and where are we going with that? And so out of 1,000 people, just how many people would feel that way? You know, just think about it for a minute. Out of 1,000 people, how many people believe that they're a woman trapped in a man's body, but they still have all their male plumbing, but they get to go inside a female bathroom where there's going to be some little girl.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Or a woman.
Or
a daughter and a mother.
And so why does that person have more rights than the other people? And that this is a place where society is going in America that really bothers me. And it is my question, where are we going with this? Because when we say, okay, well, you can go in the girls' bathroom, or you can go in the boys' bathroom if you are so inclined to be a female that feels like a male. What does that do to and for the other people that, you know, really are the ones using that restroom. So that, what does it do to the little girls? What does it do to the little boys? It's we are catering to the few in so many areas of life in our country anymore. We are catering not just to the few, Ron, to the minuscule few.
Oh, no, that's very minuscule. And so, you know, people might, you know, think of this conversation, you know, those people that are politically sensitive and easily offended, and that might say, oh my God, that's so homophobic. No,
oh, no.
No. It's not homophobic, and I'm going to tell you what my feelings are. If you feel so much, if you're a man and you feel so much that you are a woman trapped in a man's body, then show us some commitment. Go get castrated, you know, have them build a vagina, go ahead and get your estrogen shot so that you have breasts, and get your facial features changed, and take, you know, obviously you're taking estrogen cocktails,
hormones,
and things
yeah.
like the hormones and things like that to turn yourself into a female. You do all of those things, and then you want to go in the bathroom, the female bathroom. Okay, now you've physically changed. Pretty much biologically you've changed, and I'm not going to have a problem with it. But I'm absolutely going to have a problem with you if you try to cheat and fraud the system and you're a female trapped in a man's body, but you don't have the commitment to biologically change your sex. And speaking of that, the other thing, because I've been an athlete most of my life, was how about this whole men getting to compete as females in female sports? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, we've talked about that before, and I just think it's so unfair to the men competing in the female sports or the females competing in the men's sports. And there's examples on both sides. I mean, there's examples that we've talked about women, especially in track, that are, you know, completely blown away by the males that feel like females, and they don't have a chance anymore. So their sport to them that they've spent years and years training and building on is completely gone. And on the other side, there have been women who want to wrestle with men, and there are men who say, I'm just dropping out, even though I've given it all these years. I'm dropping out because the way that you have to grab somebody in wrestling, I'm not going to do that to somebody with female parts.
Well, you know, what's really interesting about this is because, you know, in sports, the documentation of sports and athletic achievement is really, really important. And so, you know, whenever you watch television or listen to the radio, they're constantly documenting the athletic performance. There are records, right? There's home run records, there's rushing records, there's passing records, there's track and field records. And so, and there are track and field records for men and track and field records for women. So you are a man that can't make it in a man's world of track and field, and then you go over and fraud the system, say that you feel like you're a female, and the laws are allowing you to compete with females, and you're blowing them off the track because you're really a male. How is that to be documented into the future? Do we put an asterisk after, you know, like one of the things they talked about in baseball, for instance, is guys that use steroids and, you know, these home runs, right? These home run records. Well, if you've been caught using steroids your whole life and you're in the record book, you ought to have an asterisk after your name that says, oh, wait a minute, these guys hit all these home runs while he was under the influence of performance-enhancing drugs. I feel the same way about men competing in women's track and field. How do you feel?
Well, I agree with you. And again, here's the thing for me. It comes down to, once again, society is saying this very minuscule part of society deserves more attention, more fairness than do all the other athletes. And I just think that that's wrong. The way that I see America, listen, I don't care what you do in life, Ron, you're never going to please everybody. But America is a country, in my mind, that was built on, doing the best it could for the majority of people, not doing the best it could for a very small minority, and to hell with the majority. And that's what's happening right now. And it's in so many areas that we can talk about. And here's another one that just happened today, that was with, I think, in Colorado, where some women sued because they wanted to be topless and walk around topless. And the city capitulated because they didn't want to pay the fees for the lawsuit. So let's just think, if you're a parent and you have a child, where is that child going to, what are they going to see? Where is that person going to be? Are they going to be in the community pool? Or are they going to be at the drugstore? Are they going to be at the grocery store? Where are these people? Why should my kid have to look at topless women when I don't want them to, and I don't want them to be brought up that way? Because these women felt like they had, kind of a...
And by the way, I get it. And in Fort Collins, Colorado, by the way, there was only two women that filed the lawsuit. Goes back to what end, and where are we going with this?
And who did you help, and who did you hurt?
That's right. So let's take our last break and come back.
Okay.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. It's time for all of us to go pill-free, and you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com.
Well, we're rounding the bend.
Well, and I'm still on a roll.
Well, so go ahead.
There's lots more issues that I want to ask this country. Where are we going with this? And one is, why are we putting up with letting politicians and judges diminish our right to have religious, not services, but religious, prayer in schools, prayer on a football field? Why are we allowing that? This is not an infringement on the state by any means. It never has been in the history of this country. Yet now all of a sudden it is. And really, who does it help and who does it hurt? So it hurts the people in America that are Christian people, which is the majority of America still. And yes, we have a very diverse country, but our country was founded on Christian principles, and we are eliminating God everywhere in our country.
I can certainly tell you why there is such a brouhaha in the public school system with respect to religion. Because there is, in the Constitution, a separation of church and state.
I disagree with that is
well, I'm just
not
telling you
separating.
Why. I'm just telling you why. So that's the legal basis for that. And every time that there's a suit, that is the legal basis of the suit. There is a separation of church and state. And when you bring religion into the school, they allege that you violate that separation.
Then why are they teaching Muslim classes in the schools?
Well, those are the good things to bring up, because to me it should be quid pro quo. We're either going to allow all religions to compete in the public sector, especially in public school, or we're not going to have any religious things that we do. But the things that really bother me is what you just kind of pointed out, saying a prayer on a football field, for God's sakes. We are predominantly a Christian nation, and the kids want to say a prayer, if the coach wants to lead the kids in prayer and everybody wants the coach to lead them in prayer, I don't think that there should be any repercussions for that at all.
What do we expect to happen if we allow the free flow of people from all countries to enter the United States as they choose to? We will have terrorists. We will have people who don't assimilate into our society. What we'll have is chaos eventually.
Well, you know, look at the unintended consequences of having an open borders mentality. Let me just tell you something that happened to me. I'm not going to mention the court case, but as you know, I've been doing a lot of testimony in both federal and state court. Well, just a couple of weeks ago, I was giving some serious testimony in a shooting case. And we started out with a pool of 174 people. Now, we needed 12 jurors, and we needed two alternates. So out of a pack of 174, it took us 3 days to whittle that down. Do you know what the primary reason was that we had to whittle that group down? What our greatest difficulty was?
Well, I think you told me that it was language.
Well, it was people that couldn't understand, comprehend English, couldn't speak English properly, couldn't think English, you know, comprehend right. English, and couldn't write English. And so how are Americans supposed to get a jury of their peers? That is a guaranteed constitutional due process. I'm sorry, but people, and by the way, this shooting had a lot of technical aspects in it, and that's one of the reasons that they brought in me as a forensic investigator to talk about the technical issues of the forensic evidence. If English is not your primary language and you have difficulty speaking English, you have difficulty understanding English, and you certainly can't write English, I'm sorry, even though you might be an American citizen, I don't want you on my jury because you are not my peer.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's so much, it's that and so much more. So the so much more is, again, who's coming across the border? What ability do they have to support themselves, to contribute to our society? Or are they just a drain on society, which affects all of us in America? Are they criminals coming over the border? You know that since the beginning of the year, ICE has arrested 978 gang members that are now not allowed to enter the country because I stopped them. But 978 gang members that, you know, would have not only not contributed to our society, Ron, but would have taken a lot away and possibly somebody's son or daughter or many of them. We have to think of the consequences. And again, this immigration thing and this open borders thing, who does it hurt and who does it help? And again, we're talking about it helps a very small, if anybody, I don't think it helps anybody, but if it helps anybody, it's a very, very small minority and it hurts the majority. Why would we be allowing this in this country?
Well, and then it speaks to, you know, our theme tonight of where are we going with this? Well, for this particular thing with regards to this immigration, it's all political theater. I think anybody that has a right mind in their head knows it's political theater, and it is simply going towards the Democrats. And I hate to be political about this. I think it's the first time I've personally brought up politics in our conversation tonight. But anybody would be naive to not believe that this is all to solidify a new power base for Democrats. And again, the situation that we see is that these people, by and large, do not assimilate. And I'm so worried about getting these no-go zones in the United States like we see them in Europe. And we're already starting to see them in Dearborn, Michigan, in Newark, New Jersey, and, you know, in places like that.
Well, and this is where you're going to have terrorist activity emanating from.
Exactly.
You just had an ISIS supporter that tried to bring down an airplane just in the last couple of weeks.
A mechanic.
Yes. So why are we, you know, we are so politically correct in this country that we are hiring these people to be airplane mechanics? Are you kidding me? We have got to learn how to profile like Israel does for the betterment of society. We can't take that the one person and say, well, you have this right, but the rest of the society be damned. You have to do what's best for the majority of society. And sometimes you just have to look at the facts and, you know, act upon those facts.
And what really bothers me, and this has been the increasing rhetoric from the new progressive left, and that is, if people talk the way we talk, we're being labeled as racist or xenophobic. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. We all come from the parents who are immigrants.
Yes.
Okay? Me, first generation. You, I think you're second generation. Right? Dutch, I'm Italian. But and so many people come across and, you know, bring something to the table in the United States, are properly vetted, wait in line, go through the testing process, and become American citizens. We welcome those people to our shores, but we do not welcome, nor should we welcome, people that skip through the line and cheat and are criminals and create the havoc that they create in the United States. Something like 44% of prisoners in a state and federal prison are illegal aliens.
That's a huge amount.
Exactly. And we got about 26 million illegal aliens in the United States out of an overall population of about 320, 330 million people. And so we have a disparity in the amount of criminals that are illegal aliens that are convicted felons and are housed in federal prisons or state prisons. Okay, that's a serious problem. Yet nobody wants to speak of that because they fear being labeled a racist or a xenophobe.
Well, and other countries, Ron, and in fact, a lot of countries, they allow immigration just as we do, and we allow immigration as well. But they ask that you bring something to the table. So even in Mexico, if we were to try to immigrate there, we have to prove that we have something to offer them. We have to prove that we can make our own livelihood. We have to prove that
we have a bond.
Yeah, support ourselves.
Exactly.
And that we have a skill that is valuable to them. Even though a lot of people come to the U.S. from Mexico and we don't have those rules, I mean, we should consider it. Has nothing to do with being whatever you said, xenophobic, racist. Has nothing to do with that. Listen, you and I travel the world. We love the people in all the countries that we go to. I mean, I can't say enough about the people that we meet across the world in every country. But that does not mean that the best of those people are coming to this country over the border illegally. And we can't afford the terrorism. We can't afford the gang members. We can't afford the people that are going to simply drain our system, because Americans have a right to their American dream, which is being able to work, being able to earn a living, and being able to have that living to support their family and their future. And instead, their money is going in a lot of directions. And I think that you were just talking to me today, Ron, about how much of a percentage of money is going, for example, to homeless in some cities, where people, instead of getting services in their cities, a huge percentage of their money is going to homeless.
Well, not only that, but a huge percentage of manpower. All right, because these officers have got calls for service. They've got important and pressing things to do, and they can't do those things between 20 and up to 50%, depending on the district that in this particular agency, of their time, their resources, their manpower, and their funding is strictly for a very, very small minority of the population, which are the homeless people. And it's ludicrous, and it's frustrating for them, and they all want to... I mean, I had discussions for the last 2 days in different districts in this jurisdiction, talking with the officers, and to a person, they expressed frustration. And why is this like this? And so they are asking, to what end And where are we going, meaning the courts? Where are we going with this?
Well, and that goes right back into the law enforcement issue with what the courts are doing, what California is doing with law enforcement. And they're trying to criminalize really everything that law enforcement does. And they're taking away all of their law enforcement powers. To what end is that? And who does it help and who does it hurt? Well, because I assure you, it does not help society.
And you know what? I'm glad you brought up law enforcement, and I want to get back into it. But, you know, talking about what the heck is going on in California, which Calisuela is what I refer to it as, Governor Gavin Newsom just commuted the sentences to, I think it was 12 murderers.
Oh, my goodness.
What is to be served by that?
Well, again, who does it help and who does it hurt? The society as a whole, the majority of people that are good, hardworking Americans just living their lives don't deserve to be treated this way. And that's my big problem, is that when we continue to look at how we as the majority are being marginalized over, or I should say under, the criminals, the homeless, the people that are doing wrong things in society, the few that there are in different classes of people. You take the classes of people that have special privileges. Right. Why does anybody have special privileges? Nobody should. I don't care if you're straight, gay. I don't care if you're black, white, brown, yellow. I don't care. Everybody should be equal, and nobody should have more than the other, and that's what's happening.
I totally agree with you. And you know what? As we're just kind of rounding the bend here, I wanted to just bring up the issue about Congress. What a do-nothing Congress. These people seem to be infatuated and determined and, I mean,
fixated.
Fixated, you know, with the Trump derangement syndrome.
Yes.
They are doing every single thing that they can do, as specious as it is, as hypocritical as it is for some of these major members, to try to impeach President Trump. Meanwhile, you have, how many people are running? We just had a couple drop out.
Well, there was 20 something.
So how many people are still running for President of the United States on the Democratic side?
About 14, I don't know.
Okay, you know what they're not bringing up? They're not bringing up the economy. They're not bringing up jobs. You know why? Because they can't win with that. So they have to, you know, bring up these witch hunt controversies that don't even exist, and they've got to call him a racist, call him a xenophobe, call him a dangerous person. And this is the guy, steadfastly, who has moved this country forward since he was elected president in 2016.
And
it's absolutely
disgraceful. You're right. And that would be duly elected. And that would be, you know, fairly and honestly elected. And somebody that the people voted for. So let the man do his job. Again, same question. Where are we going with this? Who does this help and who does this hurt? And we, as a society, need to start thinking about that, Ron, and look at things in those terms, because people are not acting honestly.
Yeah, and I think that if we don't put a lid on this, the United States is going to be irrevocably damaged. And I worry so much about the future of our country when it is doing so well and moving forward. And people have got to take into account and seriously pay attention to this Congress, and even the Republican Congress people. And we need to move this country forward. And we need to get rid of these people that are unwilling to move this country forward. And that's all I've got to say about that tonight.
Well, and the Desi dog has put herself to bed tonight, so I'm going to go join her.
And me too.